Hello, I'm Kate, and this is my Grieve Then Achieve podcast. In these sessions, we talk about death and dying, and so please do not listen unless you are ready for some rather frank conversations around grief and loss. But I do want to introduce you to some amazing people that have had significant loss in their lives, and they've then managed to work through that loss and use it as some form of a catalyst for change. So, if you're ready for that, let's go. Hello, Sam, and thank you so much for joining me on the Grieve Then Achieve podcast this morning.
Hi, Kate. No, you're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
I do wonder if when we met, probably, 15, 20 years ago, if we'd have said that this is what we're going to be doing in 20 years' time, sitting down and having a podcast around grief. I'm not sure either of us would have believed it, actually.
No, I think we were so far removed from anything to do with this subject at that point, weren't we? We were, too younger, professional women looking to, really carve out our careers in entrepreneurship. That's how we met, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was all about career. Didn't have to think anything about what was going to happen in the future, where we were in a little bubble and we didn't realise it. And it was lovely.
How lovely. I wish we could go back.
Yeah.
To some degree. Yeah, absolutely.
So start by sharing your journey with us.
So my grief journey started almost 2 years ago, in fact. 2 weeks today will be the 2 year anniversary of losing my sister. It was very sudden. It was literally here 1 minute, gone the next. She suffered a massive stroke, which she didn't recover from. And she was only 58. So, as I said, it was a real, real shock to all of us. And something that we just weren't prepared for, something that came out of the blue. We were quite happily in that bubble until that fateful day on July the 25th.
Wow. And so your grief journey was, and I think I said this in my podcast, that my grief journey was so unexpected, and that sounds really weird, but I was not prepared for grief. This is the whole point of these podcasts and the work that I do now. I never want somebody to be so surprised by grief like I was. How did your grief kind of manifest itself? What were your expectations on grief and how did you actually feel?
You're so right. I was not prepared for it at all either. And I didn't have any expectations of grief because it wasn't something I'd thought about, especially not with, my siblings being so young. So it totally rocked my world. And I think people that know me think that I'm a really strong, confident woman. And somebody actually said to me, I thought you were stronger than this when I was going through my grief. And that also really affected me because I thought, wow, am I being too weak? Am I not coping with this in the way that I should do? And, why aren't I able to remain strong? Why have I fallen apart? And why has this event completely knocked me sideways, which it did? So, my journey was, one of total shock, unexpected, something I've never experienced before. And don't think I probably ever will, to be honest, again, purely because next time I will know what to expect from myself, I assume, although I don't know that because this is the first and only real grief journey that I've experienced.
Did you find that you had certain triggers as well? Were there certain things that would happen? Again, those unexpected triggers that you just don't expect?
Yes, I think like you and I have spoken before, and the big events, I think, are easier sometimes than the smaller events. So the anniversaries and the birthdays are things I think you psych yourself up for. So you almost put up this barrier and this guard, and the emotions can't get in as such, or you expect them to come in. So you deal with them differently. But there are some real tiny triggers for me. Things like the thing that always gets me is when I think about my children, because my sister Julie is never going to meet their wives or husbands, whatever that my boys go on to do. She's never going to meet their children. She's never going to be at their weddings. And those are the things that are my next chapter, because my eldest son is almost 20. So it's those things that really, really get to my heart. They're the things that really trigger me. But over the last 2 years, I think the triggers for me have always been the car. The amount of times I've driven to my office in absolute floods of tears and then had to just lock the car, open my office door, take a deep breath and literally paint on my professional face to be able to get through the day. Mm-hmm. And if people had seen me like half an hour before, they wouldn't have believed the quivering mess that I was sitting in my car. So that's a major trigger for me, and still is actually. Still, the car will catch me out on many times.
Yeah, I think the car is really interesting actually, because you do things on autopilot, don't you? And your brain can suddenly then start thinking about things that you have managed to compartmentalize, or you've kept running, you've got other stuff to do, so you haven't got to think about it. And then when you're driving, suddenly you've got this space to
think. Too much space, yeah. And I think also for us, it's family is a trigger, because we were, and still are, and more so actually, a really close family. So it's always so evident that there's one person missing at the table, because we did everything together and we still do everything together. It's just that one person's not there anymore. So family occasions now, although I look forward to them, they are not the same. They don't bring me the same joy as they used to, which is really sad.
Yeah. And you touched on it about running a business whilst grieving. I mean, that's two separate things, isn't it? That's two parts of your life that are entwined. They can't not be. But trying to run a business and trying to be Sam, but also being grieving Sam as well. I mean, how was that?
It was really tough, to be honest. And if I'm honest with myself, I would say probably, I was going to say 9 months, but it was longer than that. It was probably a year that I was not in the game at all. My head was not in the right place. I mean, I'm a coach, so my job is to inspire and motivate others, and I didn't have that in me. And although I carried on working, I had a few months off, to be honest, where I just did the bare minimum, but I felt like I wasn't giving my clients the very best version of me. So therefore, I felt I owed it to them to take that step back. So I didn't close my practice. I still opened, and I still was working, but it was a massive pretense, huge pretense. And I mean, I don't know, because I've never asked the question about how different I was back then to 2 years on. I don't know, or before. I don't know whether they saw right through me and was thinking, yeah, this is not the same quality as I used to get. I really don't know. But I know certainly for the beginning, it's, you know, I'm a business coach, so thinking about somebody's gross margins was a little insignificant to the massive loss that I just faced, of a different kind. So I didn't want to be that person that was like, you know, it's irrelevant and I don't care, because I do care and I always have about my clients. But at the same time, I wanted to scream from the rooftops, you know, my loss that I'm suffering is bigger than maybe the loss on your P&L. And I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to articulate that. So I hid away a lot. I shut myself away a lot. I very much went inwards. I didn't want to see anybody. I didn't open myself up to my friends. I shut everybody away. I shut everybody out and thought the only way I can deal with this is on my own, which now I know was totally not the right thing to do for me. But it was what I did at the time.
I was going to ask you about coping mechanisms, actually. I remember you mentioned crisps. You were able to eat crisps and nothing else. And and shutting yourself away was your way of coping.
Yeah, I couldn't stomach a full meal for a long time. So I just literally, nibbled and grazed on crisps and nuts. And and things like that. It was, yeah, it was weird, but I suppose it was just that sickly feeling, that emotional feeling. But I did shut myself away. As I said, I shut all my friends out. I shut, I wouldn't go to the shop, and if I did and I saw somebody, I'd just walk out. I just couldn't stand that confrontation. I couldn't stand that people looking at me with a sadness and asking me how I am. Don't ask me how I am, because you really don't want to hear the answer, and you won't be prepared for the answer I'm going to give you. Therefore, don't ask me.
Did you have much support around you? Did you use counselling? Did you listen to podcasts, read books? Did you what sort of support did you have, and what did you use personally?
I found like I didn't have the support I was expecting from my really close friendship, which really affected me actually, and it's something that I've been honest and spoken about with them since, and it's all good now. But I had you, which was amazing, because obviously you'd had your own grief experience. You totally understood where I was at. You didn't judge me, you didn't tell me that I was crazy, you didn't tell me anything to do. You just listened and understood. And that was something that nobody else was able to do outside of my immediate family. And I didn't always want to be the person that turned up on my mum and dad's door crying, because they were doing that themselves, and I felt I needed to be strong for them, rightly or wrongly. But I did get some professional help. I had 6 weeks worth of grief counselling through St Helena Hospice, which I met Harry, and Harry was amazing, and he made me understand what was happening. He helped me deal with the overriding anger that had built up inside me that I couldn't deal with, and that was my trigger for going to see him. I knew I was angry. I couldn't explain why. I wasn't angry at anybody. I was just full of anger, and I felt like if I didn't deal with that anger, then I was on the road to somewhere I didn't want to be.
Wow. And do you feel like grief has changed you? Do you feel like this process has changed you as a person?
100%. Yes, I recognize that. And I think anybody close to me would recognize that too. I don't feel like I'm the same version of Sam that I was before the 25th of July, 2022. I don't think I ever will be. I think part of her has gone. I think you and I have said before that time is a great healer, and it's probably only in the last 3, maybe 4 months that I've been willing to accept that that's true, because I felt it. Whereas before, I'd be like, well, no, it's not happening for me. I still feel as bad as I did. And I think that the way that I would explain it is, for the first 18 months, it's pain, it's pure pain. That, like you said, it just knocked me sideways, and I didn't expect, and I didn't know how to handle. But post 18 months, I think for me anyway, it's been just sadness, pure sadness. So the pain is diminishing, but the sadness is there, which is one, you would expect that, and I'm happy with that. I want to be able to be sad. It's okay to be sad. I've lost my sister. She was my go-to. She was the person that kept me level-headed. She was the one that said, I think you're being unreasonable, Sam, and I feel that role model has gone. I have another sister, but she's not like that at all. So I've lost that, I've lost that person that I always went to. And that makes me sad, but no longer is it as painful as it was.
Yeah, you learn to carry the loss and the sadness, I think, don't you? It time changes things. It's just different. Like you say, you have the pain, but then you carry the loss and the sadness as a part of you, and then you go about your kind of your day and your life just holding it and carrying it. But I think you said but it's okay, isn't it? I think you take the pressure off yourself and say, actually, it's okay to be sad. I can be sad, it's fine. That's grief. And that's almost what these podcasts are about as well, allowing you to grieve. We put so much pressure on ourselves to be over things or stop grieving or the expectations of other people around us. And actually, just grieve. It's fine.
And I think it's the way that I now behave when somebody around me is going through grief. A really good friend of mine lost their parents only a couple of weeks ago. And I was able to put myself right back there and think, I know what I needed at that point, and I'm going to try and be that person for them. And they've said, you've been absolutely wonderful, but it's only because I get it,
Yeah.
you know.
Sadly, we get it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know how hard it is. And especially in the first couple of weeks, that, like, as we said, that overriding pain that you just can't describe, and you just can't, it's a little bit like childbirth. You can't describe the pain to anybody else unless they've been through it. And it's, for me, it's that same feeling. You can't describe it unless you've been through it.
No, you can't. You can't. I was a bit like you, really. I just wanted to hide. I just wanted to stay in bed and pull that duvet over. For the first couple of seconds when you wake up, you're in a different place and you've forgotten all about it. And those first few moments are wonderful because you have forgotten. And then your brain kicks in and you go, oh yeah, for me, my mama died. And it was like, oh, I've got to start this day, Groundhog Day, I've got to start it all over again. Your brain is protecting you just for those few seconds, and that's a really lovely part of the day because you've forgotten all about it, unless you've had a nightmare. I did have a couple of nightmares as well, actually. So my day started particularly badly, but I was the same as you. I just wanted to hide. I didn't know what to do with myself, and I did think I was going. There was something wrong with me. I hadn't realised it was grief. I thought that there was something intrinsically wrong with me, but it's only through
And I think,
education that we learn.
well, this is it. And I think, like, you have no idea, although I've said to you have no idea how much you helped me, because you were that person I met with you every single week. We had a coffee and a breakfast together. And it was, as much as I had Harry giving me the counselling, you were just that friend that I needed, that no other friend was able to give me, because you understood it, and because you just listened. I think anybody else just wanted to fix me, whereas you knew that I couldn't be fixed. So you were just there listening, and that having that person, it was absolutely fundamental to me and my recovery, and just helping me to understand. And you showed me every single week that what I was feeling was okay, and that it was normal, and that anything is expected, and expect the unexpected, because probably that will happen. So if I don't know, and this is the honest truth, I don't know how I would have got through that without you, to be honest.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, sadly, because we'd lost contact actually for a while, really. Well, not lost contact, but hadn't had much to do with each other, had we? Because our lives had gone in different directions, and then
Exactly. Yeah.
somehow we came back into each other's lives, and through grief. Amazing, is it? The community finds you, I think, when you are grieving. You find who you need and who is around to support you, and those ones that just don't know how to be or what to say or want to fix. A lot of people do want to fix, and that's society, isn't it? We always want to fix everybody else's problems, and unless I could bring your sister back, which I couldn't, I knew I couldn't fix it. And it's allowing that and being open and honest about that. I can't fix that problem, but I can sit with you in your grief.
Exactly, and that's what you did for me. Yeah, and I can't take away how important that was in my healing, if that makes sense. Because, yeah, as I said, nobody else was able to do that. And also, I think because you were outside of the family and you didn't know my sister, and you hadn't met my parents or my other sister, or you were that person that was detached, that was able to give me perspective rather than emotion. Whereas all my friends, obviously, they all know my family, and they knew Julie. It was a different level of conversation.
Yeah, of course.
Totally different.
Yeah.
And I think I was more honest with you as well because of that.
Yeah,
Because
it could be.
you were that voice of reason a little bit far removed,
Has your loss changed how you view things now? Has it changed things for the future? Has it changed your perception of things? Has it, do you think the loss will, does it make you make different changes in life now?
I think 100% it makes you evaluate everything around you. It certainly made me evaluate and review relationships that I had all over the place, whether they were work, family, friends. It made me review everything and evaluate what was really important to me. I think 2 years on, I think it's made me fearful, because I'm going to be 51 this year and she was 58. So That for me is always at the back of my mind, always. And I remember I had a business partner, and his father died at the age of 55. And when he was approaching that age, he really, really spiraled out of control because he didn't know how to deal with it. And it was fear. And I didn't really understand that at the time. I'm like, come on, you've made it, celebrate it. So I can sort of relate to that now. I mean, I'm not there yet at 58, but it just feels like if that's my journey, I've got such a short space left. Hopefully it won't, and I'm not going to be really, really bogged down with that date, but it's always at the back of my mind. I have to live life the way that I want it. And I think I am a people person and I am a people pleaser. And I think that that has something that has totally changed. Now it's about no, what's important for me and my children, my sons and my husband and my parents and my sister, like that for me. And I do feel like we locked in. It was almost like it was us against the world for a while. But I think that, that's just what we needed to be. So I'm definitely different. My perspective on things are definitely different. I'm no longer the same Sam, but that's okay. I've learned to live with that. And I'm happy that I've evaluated and reviewed and maybe culled a few relationships that actually were not right for me. I just didn't see it at the time.
It's an eye-opening experience, isn't it? And it certainly makes you evaluate a lot in life.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and probably everyone would say this, is you just realize what's important and who's important. And I will never forget the people that were there for me at that time and the people that
Yeah, of course.
weren't at the same time. Yeah. So I know that you and I will have friends for life now. Because I'll never forget you being there for me and I will value that forever.
I miss our breakfasts, our weekly breakfast. So do you, other than meeting for weekly breakfast, do you have any advice, anything that you wish you'd known that you know now that you didn't know then, anything that you can inspire other people with, anything that you would like other people to understand?
I think that this is going to sound so insignificant, but I think that it's just okay to be in the moment for you at that time. However you're feeling is okay. I think some of the things that I've said to my friend in the last few weeks is don't try and be brave, because who needs you to be? Actually, you just need to be however you feel at that moment. And I think also, I'd never experienced any type of counselling before, but something in me triggered, and I knew that I needed to get some help. And I'm so pleased that I was brave enough to ask for that help and to put my name down on that list and, meet Harry. And he really, as I said, helped me understand my anger. And it was deep-rooted, and I don't mind sharing. It was all about, I'd got to the age of 50, or actually 48. And there's nothing in my life that I wasn't able to fix up until that point. I've been very privileged. I've had an amazing childhood, happy, happy relationships everywhere, a successful business. There's nothing in my life that wasn't, things came along, but I could handle them, I could fix them. And this was the first thing that I wasn't able to fix. And she needed fixing, and I couldn't do it. And that's what brought on my anger. And I would never have been able to come to that conclusion ever if it wasn't for getting the help and speaking openly and honestly. So I think for me, it was finding that help, Harry, and yourself having that regular, open, honest conversation with people that didn't know me that well, people that didn't, well, Harry anyway, didn't know me that well, and I could be really honest with. And I think my biggest, not tip, but advice would be just be honest. Be honest with yourself about how you feel. That's all. Don't expect too much.
Take the pressure off. We put so much pressure on ourselves, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And be kind as well, just be what you need to be, because it's tough. It's really tough. And some days if you don't feel strong, that's okay. Because the next day you might,
Yeah.
and one
Even
day at a
hourly.
time.
even in an hour, you know,
Even hourly, yeah, absolutely,
your
yeah.
emotions are all over the place. And even in a minute, you know, you go through so many different emotions in just a short space of time. And I think that's also unexpected as well. I think that's quite hard to deal with, because like I'm smiling over here, but I'm sad, and I shouldn't be smiling because this has happened. And but I am, and it's so confusing. It's an overwhelming time as well, I think.
Really, and I think people talk about guilt, and that's something that I actually didn't experience. You know, people said, "Do you feel guilty going out having fun?" And I was like, "No, I just don't want to. It's I don't feel ready yet to come out to the world." And it's not that I felt guilty having fun at all, or smiling, or being happy. I had moments in my home where my children made me happy. That wasn't it, and I was happy to be happy. yeah, but I know a lot of people talk about the guilt. Fortunately, that wasn't something that affected me, but I know people talked about it a lot.
I think we all have such complex relationships with people, and that's why everybody's grief journey is so different. And that's why this podcast will just run and run and run, because everybody that I have on here, everybody's journey is going to be so different. And that's why I think people will take so much from this, because none of this might resonate, and then the next podcast, something might resonate, and then there's so many. Each journey is so individual, and it's trying to understand your own journey and what you need at the time, and allowing yourself to grieve, as we've said.
Yeah, totally. Which is why when you said, "Have I got any advice?" or I feel like, yeah, like I said, talking is the one thing. If someone had said that to me, I'd have said, "Well, I don't want to talk. Because right now I want to hide, and that's where I need to be. I just need to hide away." And yeah, I don't, you know. But now I know that talking was the best thing for me. But I wouldn't have listened to that piece of advice, you know, a few weeks or even a few months after. I wouldn't have listened to that because I wasn't ready to hear it. I think I liken it to in my line of work, people ask me all the time about what should I be reading. And I say the same thing, whatever you feel like you need to right now. Because what I'm reading right now is resonating with me and where my business is at or where my mindset is at. What you need to read is what's resonating with where you're at that time. And I think that's the same in our grief journey, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much, Sam. I know this is not an easy conversation to have, but I think it's so important to have these conversations around death and dying and grief and how it affects us, and just normalizing grief for people. That's all this podcast is here to do, is to help people understand their grief and to normalize grief, because it's going to happen to every single one of us in some way. There'll be losses throughout your journey of life. And the more we talk about it, the better it is. So how can people find you, Sam? How can people get in contact with you if this has resonated with them, or if they'd like to speak to you in more depth?
Oh, well, you can certainly send me an email. I'm not very good at other social media other than email and LinkedIn. So sam@cloud9, which is a number 9, businesscoaching.co.uk is the best way to contact me. I would, yeah, happily meet anybody for a coffee and a chat that this conversation has resonated with. More than happy to do that.
Thank you so much, and thank you very much for being on the Grieve Then Achieve podcast.
No, thank you for doing this and for, as I said, giving us the opportunity to speak to you. Yeah, you know what a difference you've made. I've already said that, so thank you.
Thanks, Sam. Thank you so much for listening to the Grieve Then Achieve podcast, and I truly hope that you've been able to take away some learnings around grief from this podcast. If you need any help or support on your grieving journey, then please do reach out to me. My website is grievethenachieve.co.uk, and you can find me on Instagram or Facebook under Grieve Then Achieve. Thanks again, and don't be alone in your grief. Reach out for the support that might just help you grieve then achieve.